Welcome to the Brain Tumor Podcast with Dr. David Walker. The aim of this podcast is to educate and inform. The information in this podcast is general in nature and is not a substitute for medical advice from your own doctors.
Hi, today I want to talk about meningiomas. I'm going to talk about what they are. I'm going to talk about the pathology, the grading, epidemiology, that is why they occur and who they occur in. We'll talk about the grading systems that are used, as well as the clinical presentation of meningiomas. Then I'm going to talk about investigations and treatment, as well as follow-up and outcomes. So what are meningiomas? Well, they are a group of mostly benign, slow-growing tumours that most likely arise from meningothelial cells within the arachnoid layer of the dura. Now, the membranes around the brain are, there's three layers, the dura, the arachnoid, and the pia. And meningiomas are likely to arise from cells within that middle layer, the arachnoid. Most meningiomas are histologically benign, that is WHO grade 1. But certain subtypes and certain meningiomas with specific characteristics are associated with less favourable outcomes and therefore correspond histologically to WHO grade 2 or 3. I'll go and talk about those when I talk about the pathology in more details. The lifetime risk of developing a meningioma is about 1%. So they're actually very common. It's the most frequently reported brain tumour in the US, probably in Australia as well. They account for about a third of all brain tumours overall, although tumours of meninges only account for about 2 to 3% of all paediatric primary brain tumours. More than 90% of all meningiomas are solitary, but 20 or 25% and about 2 or 3% are grades 2 and 3, respectively. The average age of patients with a meningioma is 65, so there's an increasing risk with age. Females are greater risk than males, with about 10 cases per 100,000 females and 5 cases per 100,000 males in our society. So they're about twice as common in females. This difference is greatest prior to menopause, and grade 2 and 3 tumours occur at higher rates in males. There's also a significant variation of incidence according to race. And in America, for instance, African Americans have an incidence of approximately 9 per 100,000 compared to white Americans, that is, of around 7 per 100,000. And in Asians or Pacific Islanders, their overall risk, males and females, is about 5 per 100,000. What are the meningiomas caused by? Well, most of the time there's no known cause, but there is a definite relationship between ionizing radiation and the development of a meningioma, particularly in those people that have been exposed to radiation as a child. Now, in years gone past, and radiation to brain and spine was used for a treatment for leukemia, and in those patients, although that's an effective treatment for the leukemia, but those patients do have an increased incidence of meningiomas, and unfortunately those meningiomas can be very difficult to treat. Radiation is not only given for neoplastic or cancer, but it used to be given for tinea of the scalp. I'm not sure if it is still, but in those patients that were given radiation for tinea, they also have an increased risk of meningiomas. In unfortunate people that have been exposed to environmental radiation, there's also an increased risk of meningioma developed late in life. There is an association between hormones and meningioma risk, given the association with increased risk in women, but also the presence of progesterone receptors in most meningiomas. So there is a hormonal relationship there, and also the fact that meningiomas are much more frequent in females pre-menopause as compared to males in that age category. However, there's been no established link, I should say, between chemicals, dietary factors and occupations, as well as trauma and mobile phone use. There's no evidence for that at all. Where do meningiomas occur? Well, the vast majority of meningiomas arise either intracranially, and less commonly intraspinally, or within the orbit. Intraventricular, that is within the ventricle system within the brain, or extradural, that is outside the meningiomas in the spine, are uncommon. Within the cranial cavity, common sites include the convexities, that is the outside of the skull, or meaning the outer surface of the skull, but also in the skull bases, so that is the around the cranial nerves at the base of the skull. Most spinal meningiomas occur in the thoracic region. Meningiomas occur just in the lining underneath the skull itself. So if you can picture a tumour that's growing within the skull, on the inner surface of the skull and pushing in, not really from the skull, but pushing into the brain, that's the typical appearance of a meningioma. Well, there are two ways that a meningioma can be detected, and most common, or very common these days, is an incidental finding. So a person will have an investigation, a CT scan or an MRI scan for some reason, maybe they've had a knock on the head or they do have some form of headaches, and then a meningioma is detected, which is small and not causing any problems. So that's one way meningiomas can be picked up. Another way is if they cause problems. So any tumour, as I've mentioned in my previous podcasts, any tumour or mass within the skull can cause clinical features or clinical problems by one of three ways: raised intracranial pressure that is causing progressive headaches and other related symptoms, seizures, or neurological deficit. And that deficit will depend entirely where the tumour, in this case meningiomas, is located. A tumour, for instance, around the motor area of the brain may cause either seizures affecting the motor function on the other opposite side of the body, or weakness. Or a tumour affecting the frontal lobes may cause cognitive or behavioural disturbance. Or a tumour affecting the occipital lobe, that is the back of the brain, may cause visual disturbance. Now, because tumours, or meningiomas I should say, occur often around the base of the skull, they can affect cranial nerves, such as the optic nerves, so vision can be affected directly because of direct involvement of the optic nerves, or other cranial nerves, such as in the posterior fossa, so that hearing can be affected, or facial sensation, or facial motor function, etc. Like any tumour as well, within the cranial cavity, meningiomas can cause obstruction of the normal flow of brain fluid, and so therefore can cause hydrocephalus. Now, the effect of meningiomas may not be due solely or even largely to the mass of the tumour itself, but meningiomas can cause swelling or edema in the underlying brain. And it's often the case that edema caused by the tumour is a greater contributor to the clinical presentation than the tumour mass itself, although it can be hard to work that out, of course. How do we investigate meningiomas? Well, CT scan and MRI scan are complementary. CT scans can demonstrate calcification, which is common within meningiomas, and also demonstrate hyperostosis. Meningiomas can cause the overlying bone or nearby bone within the skull to thicken, and that may be due to direct invasion of the skull, or just because of the local effects as well, not necessarily invasion. So CT scans are very important for investigation, as well as MRI scans. MRIs give us much greater detail and are essential for investigation of a meningioma. Now, as I mentioned before, tumours can cause cerebral edema, and it's occasionally very prominent, and so even relatively small tumours can cause significant edema in the surrounding brain, and these are prominent in certain histological or variants of meningiomas, and also in higher grade tumours. Meningiomas can cause cysts around them, so at the periphery of a tumour, and they themselves can cause significant mass effect as well. Meningiomas very rarely spread beyond the brain or the intracranial cavity. Now, within the spine, MRI scans are obviously the most important investigation tool, and meningiomas will cause local mass effect largely and spinal cord dysfunction, hence, for instance, progressive weakness in the lower limbs. Radicular pain, that is chest wall pain, is another common sign with spinal meningiomas. What do they look like? Well, most tumours are firm and rubbery, and they're also very well, compared to other tumours, well demarcated from the surrounding structures. They're sometimes lobulated, but more often their typical feature is a broad base, a broad dural attachment. Meningiomas often, at the microscopic level, invade the dura, and therefore they can invade the dural sinuses, which are the large veins that are within the membrane around the brain. Occasionally, meningiomas invade the adjacent skull, which I've mentioned before, and that hyperostosis or thickening of the skull can be an indication of that. Meningiomas also attach to and can surround blood vessels, even arteries, particularly at the base of the skull. And they may also, even if they're benign, invade the overlying scalp and skin, and also other structures like the orbit. The adjacent brain is often compressed, but it's rarely, frankly, invaded, although that can occur particularly in the higher grade tumours. In certain sites, particularly in the skull base, and in particular the sphenoid wing, which is just behind the orbits. Tumors can grow not in a mass. They can grow more in a flat carpet-like growth pattern, and that's a so-called en plaque meningioma as opposed to the more common en masse growth pattern. The microscopic level, the most common varieties are meningothelial, fibrous, and transitional meningiomas, which is, and transitional tumors are just a mixture of meningothelial and fibrous. I won't talk about the other multiple varieties of meningioma, of which there's about a dozen. There are some subtypes that do have a higher propensity to recur and automatically graded 2 or 3, and they include choroid, clear cell meningioma, and clear cell meningiomas, which are grade 2, and papillary and rhabdoid meningiomas are automatically grade 3. Now, any subtype can be a grade 2 or 3 if they have a higher cell proliferation rate, and so they're often referred to as atypical and anaplastic meningiomas, respectively grade 2 and 3. Meningiomas can occur in certain genetic abnormalities, including neurofibromatosis 2. Well, how are meningiomas treated? Well, often incidental tumors, which are small and causing no problems, do not need treatment, but we just follow them and we treat them as required if they grow or if they cause problems. But if a tumor is requiring treatment, the best treatment in most circumstances is surgery. And surgical resection is the aim, and complete removal of the tumor with its base, with its dural attachment, will most of the time cure the patient of that tumor. That's not always possible, however, and sometimes we can remove the tumor mass but can't remove the dural base, and we, as a surgeon, we will diathermy or burn that dural base, but that's usually results in a good outcome and no recurrence of the tumor. But sometimes the tumors recur in that circumstance, and certainly if we only partially remove the tumor or only biopsy the tumor, then the result is very likely that the tumor will recur without further treatment. The other major form of treatment is radiation therapy. And radiation therapy is a good treatment, but it's a little bit ironic that radiation is both a cause and a treatment for meningiomas. But nonetheless, radiation treatment is a very effective treatment in some selected cases. That radiation treatment is best reserved for tumors that are small, usually less than 3 centimeters in diameter, but they can be used for larger radiation can be used for larger tumors as well. The most effective way to treat meningiomas with radiation therapy is using stereotactic or very highly focused radiation therapy protocols. That can be a one-off treatment or so-called fractionated therapy, where the treatment is divided over several treatment episodes. So overall, meningiomas are generally have a good outcome. The surgery is the best if it's possible, but radiation treatment can be very effective as well. Meningiomas are generally benign and have a low rate of recurrence or regrowth, but that can happen. In very rare circumstances, tumors can be very difficult and even impossible to treat, and occasionally these tumors will invade widely amongst the skull base and the surrounding brain and defy attempts to surgically resect them or treat them with radiation. Unfortunately, chemotherapy in these circumstances is fairly ineffective, although there are some regimes that can be used. So that covers most of the important points regarding meningiomas. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Your support is very much appreciated.
Thanks for listening to the Brain Tumor Podcast with Dr. David Walker. Stay tuned for more episodes and don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast platform. The information in this podcast is general in nature and is not a substitute for the medical advice you get from your own doctors. Dr. David Walker is not able to provide specific information or advice related to your condition or any individual's condition in this podcast. But if you do have suggestions or feedback, send David an email to Professor David Walker at brisbrain.com.au.